This is the second interview with Rebecca August, 90-year-old trade unionist. The interview again took place in her room at the Jewish Home for the Aged. The room is on second floor and is only one block from the freeway, and the continuous background noise level is rather high. Additionally, there are several points during which airplanes flying over almost drowned out the sound. The period covered in this tape is her experiences first in London working as a girl of 12 and later her life in Chicago. It focuses on her involvement with Jane Addams and her organizing efforts for Jane Addams in the Hull House, the formation of a women's branch of the Workmen's Circle, and her involvement with other very independent young women, her involvement with the anarchist and socialist movements in Chicago, and some of her own beliefs and feelings about free love, etc. There is a fair amount of confusion at many times between what occurred in Seattle and what occurred in Chicago. These were invariably cleared up, but a great deal of caution must be used in using this material. For instance, in questioning her about the 1910 general strike, she seemed to feel that the parade in which they were hosed by the police took place during this 1910 strike. However, according to information on the 1910 strike, this occurred in September, and although it was still going on the following winter, she presumably had left Chicago by then. Details, therefore, are highly questionable and should be checked. Maybe we can begin. You went to London when you were 7.
Yes.
And then you started working there when you were 12.
When I was 12.
Now, what kind of work were you doing there exactly?
In tailoring. My father was a tailor. And he taught me a little bit how to sew, and then he had hired a woman to show me how to make buttonholes by hand. That was amazing. So I was really, the main thing was hand buttonhole making, but I knew everything. I could, from top to bottom, I could make the coat all by myself. So I worked in a shop, in many shops, where they take out, in a small shop, they take out suits and have it made to order or something like that. Well, so I did all that work. I did the buttonholes, I did the first, I don't know much about tailoring, the basting, the sleeves and all that. But my buttonhole making was my main section of the work. The main section of tailoring was buttonhole.
Now, in London, did you have to, in these shops, did you have to provide your own thread and everything too?
No, they provided
different. Were there other children working in these shops?
Oh, yes. A lot of them. About my age, and some of them even younger.
And what were they doing?
Same dumb thing as some part of tailoring. So, they'd come in the morning about probably 7 o'clock, maybe before that, and start to work, and then they'd give us a little break and give us a little tea, some tea time, you know, English tea time. You know. And that's all. And I think as I told them, the men, the bosses or the foremen, they wanted a woman to go right down with them. I worked up when I was in about, I was probably 12, 13 years old. And the boss, we had quite a few people, maybe 30, 40 people working there. And one day he says to me, Rebecca, will you stay a little later? I want to talk to you. Well, all right. Boss wants to talk to me. And it happened that he had a family, wife and children, they lived downstairs, and the factory was upstairs. So I stayed, and he said, come on, lay down with me. I a young girl, so not, I wasn't even 12 years old then. I should do my dominant. That's what I wanted. And I screamed, I said, no. You're coming out. But that was the condition, and that was the same condition that I told you then. Here too, the same thing.
Did you get fired when you refused that?
I got fired, that's true. So that was the condition of what a woman had to go through. Women, girls, young girls.
Now, the company, the factory, was upstairs in his other house then?
Yeah.
And it was how large is there? Were about 30 or 40?
Yeah, about 30 or 40. You know, it was operated on Christmas and all that. That time they used to have the iron, fresh iron by gas, by coal. Mostly we had no gas, electricity, the coal ovens, and that's where they had the iron. So, you know, I mean, in the tailoring system, it's quite a lot. There's operators, dressers, and handwork and all that. So I was 12 years old. I was a big girl. I was about as big as I am now. I think even bigger and taller. And so we wanted to go right on.
Now, do you remember how much you made in it?
Well, I made about, a shilling and one of six, a shilling is a quarter of a dollar, a shilling. A shilling and sixpence, I think that sixpence is a half of a shilling. That's about big, about 75 cents. That was a lot of money.
A week, that week.
Yeah.
Now, were your other brothers and sisters working, or you were the only one working?
Well, I was the oldest of eight children, you see. But later, my brothers worked in Chicago, and they came to Chicago. I was the only one in London that worked.
I see. And your father worked?
Yeah, my father.
So the two of you really supported the family.
Yeah, but then, and they were still in Russia.
I see.
And then they came later, and of course they came later. That is why when my mother came, I don't remember how old I was. I was probably 8 or 9 or 10, I don't know. My mother came, she had five children, five or six children. My mother came, and we lived in a very small place, and then my mother got sick because of the conditions and one thing and another. And see, I was the oldest. Next one to me was my brother. He was 2.5 years younger. Next one was 2 years younger. Next one was about 1.5 years younger, and so on and on. And then when my mother came to London and she saw the conditions, the way things were, and my father wasn't very nice. My father lived with her sister. So all these things upset her so much. So I had to take care of her. And then she became pregnant, and then she had a miscarriage, and I had to be the nursemaid and everything. And as I told you, I used to walk down the street, go out to the shopping, one thing or another, and the people from the school board saw a big girl walking on the streets, and I should be in school. So they went to my parents and asked, well, what's the reason? Why is she not in school? So they said, well, she had to help her mother. Well, I said, yeah, that had nothing to do with that. She must go to school. So 9 years old, and I could be in school. It was in kindergarten, and I went through hell, and I said, put me into kindergarten with children that know the language, know what the teachers tell them, and here I was, a little ignorant person, didn't know anything, didn't know what the teachers say, and didn't know nothing, and with smaller children. Well, anyway, I made it little by little until I got to the third grade. And I was in the third grade, you knew I'd sign my name and so on. So my father thought, well, that's enough as long as I know how to sign my name and so on. So I told him that before. When I was 12, and we had no birth certificates in Russia. So being as I was a big girl, my father went to court as far as 14, because that was the age that, you know, the age of that, that's, well, got to school under 14. So why? So I was 12. And from that time on, I worked.
Now, what were the conditions in the shop like? Was there, was it cold? Was it dark in the shop that you worked?
Well, London is known as a fog, a fog country. Oh, very, very foggy. It's so foggy, when you get off the streetcar from the car, you couldn't see into the sidewalk. It was so foggy. Oh, it was terrible. But we made it. Foggy and cold. They used to put the coals or the coke, not the coal, but the coke, and they used to on the sidewalks, and then they had to take it into the house. Oh, goodness, terrible,
terrible. Inside the shop, what was it like?
Inside the shop? Well, it was inside the shop, but they had gas. I don't know if it was gas or what, it was lamps, mm-hmm. I don't know, I don't know if they had gas, but it was lamps. At each table was a lamp, and you could see, that's all. But conditions were terrible, and that is why my father had cousins in London. And in America, in America it's a ballroom London. If you should come to America, so my father came to America. And I came, and he came first, and then he sent for me and my brother.
And you and your brother came over together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We came over together in 1904.
Now, did you go directly to Chicago?
The what?
Did you go right to Chicago when you got to the United States?
Yes. See, I was going to stay in New York. I had an uncle in New York, and they wouldn't let me out. I was in the immigration office, you know. And my brother and I, and they wouldn't let us out because my father was in Seattle, Washington, and I had to go to Seattle, Washington. And that's how, my father was in Chicago, but I wanted to stay in New York. I wanted to stay in New York with my aunt, but he didn't let me off. I went to Chicago. Mm.
So you went straight to Chicago then?
Yes,
straight to Chicago. Oh, can you tell me, before we talk about Chicago, in London, was there any, in the shops there, was there any ideology about unions? Were there any unions there at all?
No, I didn't know anything about it. I never knew anything about unionism. As I think I told you, I didn't know even what unionism was. I didn't know what it meant, what such a thing, until, as I told you, in Chicago, when I was working in the house shop in the marks, and they cut the prices. We were getting $3.50 for a buttonhole. And I was very, very fast because the rest of the family was still in London, and we wanted to bring him over. So the faster I worked, sooner I was able to bring him over. And so when the manager of Hartshaffner Marks, when he, I suppose, he look over to see the prices, check on the wages of the people. When he saw that a girl, and I was making then about $20 a week, with long hours, and I worked very fast, so he cut the prices. And we were 12 girls that were sitting at one table. And there was another girl, she was a Bohemian girl, she was younger than I. She was faster than I. She made about $24 a week, but I made about $20. Oh, this is just ridiculous. Damn, girls should make that much money? Oh, no. We have to cut the prices. So this is from now on, the prices will be instead of $3.50 a button, or it will be $0.03 a button. I can imagine. We'd make about 12 or 14 buttonholes an hour, and all that would mean. So I said to the girls, and I didn't know anything about unionism, I didn't know anything about that. I thought that this was outrageous, and maybe there was a rebellious spirit in me. I said to the girls, I said, Let us go into the washroom and talk about it. That's all we don't know. We can literally take it. So I suppose all of us spoke. I said, why is it? Instead of getting a raise, I said, we're getting a cut. What's the idea? So, well, I suppose there are, you know, my stupid babies, the stupid is everywhere, so one of these ones was only girls or mental program manager, what I said. So I was fired, and my father was fired. Those are
now, what was the plan of the girls? What were you going to do? Were you all going to refuse to work then?
What?
What was the plan that the 12 of you decided on before you were fired? Were you all going to refuse to work?
Well, we all was wanted to protest against that cut, because why, it's terrible. 3.5 cents, they should give us even more because things are going up. No, so because we said that would mean quite a bit of, quite a cut. A half cent in each buttonhole. Look how many buttons make them a week. So they fired me. I was a picket. I was a striker, and they fired my father because I said I didn't want the father of a striker. So that's when my troubles began again, and that's all I say. I was boycotted from every show I went to. I was boycotted.
Now, this was at Hartshaft & Lawrence.
That
was the very first place you worked when you got to the United States.
Well, that was the first place, and then I worked in all other shops, and Lawrence Taylor's, and all the different big places, but as soon as they found out that I was a striker.
Now, what would happen exactly? You would talk to the other people there?
I wouldn't even talk at all, but I happened to know, and, you know, there was such a thing going on. Capital defend themselves as well as labor does now. I suppose I'd say they said there's a girl by that name, and she's trying to make trouble. She's a striker. Don't keep her. So the father, well, Rebecca, we can't keep you. We don't want a girl like you in our shop.
Now, were there other women at the same time who were beginning to talk like that?
There were a few, but not many. I don't know if some women are satisfied, whatever they made, I'm satisfied. As they say, what's her name? I told you when I went to talk to some of the people once, like when Jane Addams sent me out, they say, even if I make $1 a week, it's better than nothing. So they were satisfied, but I couldn't be satisfied.
Now you continue doing the buttonhole work,
or
did you start doing other work too?
Yes, I can do that, or anything in the family life.
Well, where did you go then from? Oh, first, when you got to Chicago in 1904, there was a big strike. Did you come after that strike?
Yeah, I came after. There was a strike. There was time to organize the Hebrew Trade Union, they called it, the Hebrew Trade Union. I didn't know much about it, but I heard later the Hebrew Trade Union is where Jane Addams, she was the one trying to organize it, you see. It was very, very hard. So that is when I got to know Jane Addams, and I could talk a little, I felt Jewish and a little English. So she sent me to the women of these men that were supposed to be on strike, that they should encourage the men to keep on striking. Because they're going to keep on striking and finally get somewhere.
Now, what strike was this?
Well, and some were cigar makers and some were bakers, you see. And they were the Jewish, what they called themselves, the Jewish Trade Union. The Jewish Trade Union. And so when I went to these women, now that's what they're saying. They said, well, you can come back, my husband makes $1 a week. It's better than nothing. So they were satisfied. But I had to talk and talk to these women. Some of them agreed. Some of them agreed that I would try to make a little collection to help them along and so on and so forth. So that's when Jane Addams was very active with all the trade unions. And, you see.
Now, were you yourself in a union yet at this point? Was there any union in the
legal trade? No, no union in my trade. Later on, there was the garment makers, but they didn't amount to very much, the garment makers.
When was that?
That was about 1905, 1906, mm-hmm. I remember that. But see, the amalgamated, originally, started it in 1915, and they were recognized.
But there was an earlier, there was United Garment Workers before that. You know, you weren't involved with them at all.
No, that was the ladies, the Women's International Ladies' Down Wages. I was not involved in that.
You were always making the men's clothes.
Men's clothes, yes. Yeah. But we helped in that, wherever there was any help needed, any tickets, you know, like we did.
Were there any strikes or lockouts at the places that you yourself was working?
The what?
Were there any strikes at any of the places you worked at?
Well, yes, a lot of strikes would walk out. And in one place, I told you, there was a strike. It wasn't a big shop, a small shop. And I was picketing, and so one of them scabbed on in. She had a big purse, and I said to her, I says, lady, I says, why do you go in scab? I says, we're trying to organize this place. So that she can get better conditions and better wages. She took a purse, she hit me on the head. I cut my head up. So I was arrested.
Now, when was that?
Well, that was, I don't know, 1906 maybe, something like that. I was arrested. I was taken to the county jail. They sewed my head up. It was just a little cut here. They sewed it up. They kept me overnight, and then I was taken to the jury trial. And everybody says, why, a young girl like that, what is she doing? A young girl is going out striking. What for? But there was one man who was there. He said, how could she, what I was arrested for, to strike in that woman? So he said, one man there said, how could she strike the woman when the woman struck her on the head and her head was cut open? So the case was dismissed.
Now, was this your own shop that you were picketing, or was it another shop?
And that was another shop. Okay. I never worked there. It was another shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but it was a tailor. It was
a tailor shop. Yeah.
Now, when you would go pick at another shop like that, was this during your lunch hour or something? Were you working at the same time?
Well, it was a lunch time in the morning, just before, you know, time before they went into work, and after that, when they went into work, I'd go to work. So. But that's what. So you see, they had the, when they arrested you, and such crazy ideas, such accusations. They know here. I was picketing. The other gentleman was scabbing. I went and talked to her. She had a big person. She hit me in the head. So they asked me that I struck her.
How many other people were picketing there with you?
Oh, there was quite a number. There was one man that he was later one of our organizers, and he saw it. And he said, how could they have such a charge against you?
Now, what was the union there that was doing the picketing?
That was the garment workers, not the ladies.
The United Garment Workers.
Yeah, United Garment Workers. And that's it. It's just like, I don't know whether you ever saw that play, The 11th. Was that play, The 11th? It was, I forget who wrote it. About, a person was accused of murder or something, and they had a trial case, a jury case, and all the defense lawyer asked each jury how that man looked. Could I recognize that man that this person done the killing, the shooting? So one man says yes, and one says he looked like this, and one man looked like this, and so on and so forth. And then another man, he says, the case was early in the morning. And he says, it was early in the morning, this is a fence lawyer, it was early in the morning, and you were rushed out of bed because you heard a holler, and you saw the man go by. Could you recognize the man? He says, yes, I think I could. And he wore glasses. He says, did you wear glasses when you went out? He says, no. How could you recognize that man without your glasses when he couldn't recognize anybody here? The case was dismissed. You see? So that was a big a player that a lot of people saw it. Jury of 11.
Now,
so that's why some of the cases, how they arrested me.
How did you get involved in some of these, like in this picket line? You worked with some of the people or what?
Well, yes, I worked with some of the people. They asked me to go out and picket. One man, he's dead now, he was trying to organize the alteration department, the alteration, the Bushel, what they call it, the alteration for Bushel. I knew him, he's dead now, I knew him for all that. And he knew that I was a rebel, they called me. Asked me if I would go down and pick him, so I did, and that's how it.
Now, but there was never any thought to trying to organize in the places that you were working yourself.
Yes, a lot of places. They fired me for that. They said, one man says, look, if you don't stop talking, we'll kick you out of here. I don't want no pickets here. I don't want no union pickets here. And then, not very long ago, it was this 1934, 35. I was working one of the shops, Rosenblum, the big shop there, now ladies' tailors. They used to be in the men's tailors, Rosenblum, the big shop. I worked there, and the manager kind of had suspicion that I was a union lady. And of course, there's always spies everywhere, they hire them. So, maybe I talked about unionism and tabling or something. So one day I had my union paper, the Advance, that's a union magazine. I had it and had it under my table. So while I went to the washroom, a woman picked out that paper and saw it, and she showed it to the manager. So when I came back, he says, Rebecca, you're not going to work here anymore. We don't want you here anymore. You're a union lady. We don't want you. You got your union label and you're saying we don't want to. Just for that.
Well, now in those early days in the shops in Chicago, were you working mainly with men? Were the shops mainly men? Were the shops mainly men workers in those shops that you worked in Chicago?
Yes.
How many women would there be in the shop usually?
It was very men and women.
The women did all the finishing work?
Yeah, men were men and women. I had a lot of men in the union, I don't know where it is. Good guy, yeah. Did you know Bessie Hill?
I knew she is.
I don't know what I've done with that question.
Well, did you, were you still doing buttonholes all that time in Chicago, or did you start doing other work?
Well, I was doing buttonholes mainly, but I could do any other work. Uh-huh. Any work at all in the trade union. There's a little note in the paper list about me. I don't know, I had to...
In the shops in Chicago then, Rebecca, how long would you usually work in a place before something would happen?
Well, it all depends. Some people would, they're afterwards and the union was recognized. It mattered.
Well, was the union recognized while you were still there?
Oh, yeah.
About when was that?
Well, because when I left in Chicago in 1910, the union wasn't organized, but when I went out to Seattle, I told you that they were working there and working hard. And
but in Chicago, still, when you left, there was still no union?
No union, uh-huh. No. Only the garment workers. But Jane Addams was helping to organize the amalgamation.
Now, how did you become first associated with Jane Addams?
Well, how I came is because I lived in same neighborhood where Jane Addams had the Hull House. You know where she had the
Hull
House?
On Hull there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know that she used to do a lot of good for immigrants. She tried to help the organizers. Of course, I call her the garbage lady, if you know that. Because when she came to Chicago from Cedarville, where she lived, and she saw in the streets of the garbage can standing there with the rats all around it and everything, oh, it's terrible. The first thing she did, she had a lot of work, you know, millionaire women with philanthropists working with her. And they saw first to try and clean up the garbage cans. And she had called her the garbage can, the garbage cleaner. Well, and then this is how the poor children of immigrants moving and walking around, having nothing to do and not having enough to eat. She had a place. She'd sit there like that, and the little children would come by 2 hours for her, and she'd have a lot of cookie, piece of candy, a sandwich, something. And then she'd find out about their parents and try to see to get their parents organized. And so I got to know about that. And so she asked me, would I come and help her do some work for her? Not pay, voluntary work. Well, I said, if I can do something, why not? I was always willing to help whatever was good for them. So, what can I do? So she said, I'll tell you, go out and say, as I told you, she was trying to organize the bakers and the cigar makers. To go and talk to those women and tell them what it means to be organized. What they will do, what they can do with the union, what they will do for them. So some of the women, they didn't want to hear about it. I said, no, even if my husband makes $1 a week, it's better than nothing. I said, yes, but I said, $1 a week now, maybe next week I'll make it, you'll only have $0.5 a week if you say, take it all. You would protest and encourage your husband to go out and strike and protest against you. And as I told you, Jane Addams always said, behind every great man is a great woman. I said, you be the great woman, help your husband to go out and strike.
And so you were talking to the wives.
The wives.
Rather than to women who themselves were working. Did you also talk to women who were workers?
Yes, I worked with them, sure. I talked to them, they said. But here, Jane Addams wanted me to talk because I could talk Jewish. And I could go to them and talk to them in Jewish. And then come back to her and tell her in English what to say. Mm-hmm. So that's how it helped that we got together.
Now, was that before your mother came? Or was it that after your mother got here?
Yes, after my mother came, mm-hmm. I used to go out to them. And then at one time, we were always, and at that time there was a lot of rebels came from the old country, you know, the young Jewish women and young girls would come back because they wanted to get away from Tsarism, and then they wanted to be by themselves, they wanted to do something for themselves, become independent. So I mingled with a lot of women, that happens to be, I'm on a picture, I haven't seen yet, that was taken in 1908.
Oh.
You see, some of these women, we discuss problems.
Oh, I'm going to want to borrow some of your pictures and make copies of them.
Yeah. They would, 1908.
How come they're all wearing the same kind of dress?
We liked it. We wanted to be kind of uniform.
Was this some sort of club?
No, it was just a group of us, our own group that we organized. So we said, well, if we let us do something, let us try and do something. So we said that at that time the Workman's Circle became into existence in 1970. In 1900, the Workman's Circle started in. And when we heard of our Workman's Circle, what they're doing, so we said, well, let's join the Workman's Circle. Now, the Workman's Circle was only, they called at that time the Arm of the the English Jewish, it was conducted in Yiddish. So I said, why? You have to be a wife of a husband before you can join, and so on and so forth. And the men had always say, let that woman start a club of her own. Let her start an auxiliary, a woman's auxiliary, ladies branch auxiliary. So we worked amongst all these women, and we got together, and I told Jane Adams what we wanted to do. Oh, that's wonderful, wonderful. I said, would you help us? Of course we would. So we went and we hired a little hall, and we got a number of... forget about it. So they came. Quite a number of women were willing to become independent and have a branch of our own.
Now these were all single women who were working?
All single women, all working. And so we said, let us join, let us have a branch of our own.
And what was it you were going to do?
Well, it's a kind of a community branch, a branch of people belong to a branch and imagine something and seeing what in the discussing problems, discussing books, discussing
it. It was more of a social.
Yeah, more social work, yes. And know what's going on in the world, and what's doing here, what we can do for us and for others. Yeah, that's the way it concerns them. So, which is silly in existence today, you know. So, I went to Jane and I asked her, I said, would you like to come and talk for us, and get together a few, as many people as we can, women as we can, and you talk for us. And you talk for us in a very plain, simple English, so they could understand, because most of them couldn't understand English, only a few words. So, and tell them what it means for women to be organized together. Well, she said, sure, Rebecca, I'd be glad to do it. So we hired a small hall, and we came to the meeting, and of course me and I organized the place, and I asked, so I was supposed to be the chairman, and she was to talk for us. We came on a stage, and I broke down and I cried. She said, what are you crying for? What are you crying for? I said, look at the people. 14 people, only 14 women were there, girls, younger. I had spoken to a lot of them. She says, Rebecca, don't cry. This is the cream of the crop. You will get more. Each one of these will go out and talk to somebody else and get more. She says, no organization sounds large. We all increase as we go along. So all right, so she spoke for us and she told us how nice it is to see that the young women as we are, we want to be independent and we want to be in our own and we want to do things for ourselves. A very encouraging talk. And we got from the working circle, we got a charter number 3 of the woman, the working circle, women's charter number 3. Yeah. And it was all the correspondents were in Jewish, Yiddish. And
so all the young women were Jewish?
Yeah. And
it was all Yiddish then?
Yeah. And of course, and I couldn't read English. So all the correspondents came from the office was in Yiddish. So I carried on for a while, then I had to give it up. I said, I can be the secretary, because I was a secretary. I can be a secretary because I have to have somebody else to read it for me, and then after somebody else to answer it, let somebody else take it over. Somebody else took it over. Meanwhile, something else happened, and I moved away from Chicago, and what happened to that branch, I don't know.
You weren't, you didn't stay in contact with any of those other young women.
I didn't come in contact with any. Then when I came to Seattle, Washington, I tried the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Another working circle.
Here in Even in Los Angeles, we signed one not long before, not much long before, in 1932, we tried to...
Another woman's name.
Yes.
Now, besides the Workman's Circle, you were involved with anarchists at the time and with the socialists. Besides the Workman's Circle, you were involved with a lot of the other...
I was involved first with the Socialist Party. And then the Socialist Party became too reactionary, too mild, or too mild for me. And so I joined the Anarchist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a too many outstanding people in the Anarchist Party.
Now, you had speakers like Emma Goldman coming
and Emma Goldman, and Bert Workman, like Anna Workman, we involved in Eclair. We had so many outstanding persons that was so nice and so kind. And you know, they wanted to see improvement take place as we go along, not wait for the pie in the sky when you die. Wanted here, one pie here, nothing. And we worked for a long, long time together.
Were there many women involved in the anarchist circles?
Yes, it was quite a number. Quite a number.
And what were your attitudes about marriage, for instance?
Well, I tell you, that was one thing maybe they had against the anarchists. There were pre-lovers. But they called them pre-lovers, because a man and woman is in love with each other, they have to go to the judge, and the judge will say, okay, you can live together. You love each other, and you agree to live together, you live together. The state of Washington recognized common law marriage. And it's very well recognized, and it went along very well, very well. We had the home colony. Now there's a book by the name of I think his name is Stuart Holmes. Stuart Holmes, I think his name is. He wrote on the home colony, on the Washington home colony, and he wrote of the people what grew out of common law marriages. The wonderful people came out of it. We had one family, they had a boy of 13 years old. And he was put in the University of Washington at 13 years old. They wouldn't allow it. You have to be at least 18 before you can start going to college. And they had to put up a fight to get in the books. He passed every rule, everything he passed at 13 years, and they had to admit him. It was officially admitted that he was 13 years old. You see.
Well, in Chicago there, most of your association then was with the anarchist group.
Yeah, in Chicago, I also was with the anarchist group.
Mm-hmm. And what was your ideology like then? What were the kinds of things that you
Well, and the ideology was to improve conditions and see that, I think we had the rent strike, when it was a depression time, I think. At one time, we had a rent strike, and we went out on strike.
In Chicago,
this was in Chicago. We went out on strike to see that we get a rent reduction, rent strike. And Ben Brightman, if you heard of him, he went with us. And on the way going home, he wanted me to go to a hotel with him. I said, go to a hotel with you? What? I said, I'm going home. He said, don't you believe in free love? I said, I believe in free love, but I should be free enough to choose my own